Today we get another wonderful banquet of the Word of God. I love this first reading, this image of water flowing from the temple, which Ezekiel saw, symbolic, of course, of the abundance of grace and mercy flowing from the heart of God, flowing from the heart of Jesus on the cross. So that's one, that's in itself a great reading. And then we have this other great reading in the Gospel where Jesus heals a man who's been sick for 38 years, a man who's basically defeated by illness and without hope. So Jesus is the source of this abundant grace, this water. It is a great reading. Before we get to them, though, let's set aside the significance of this day for others. When I was growing up, if anyone mentioned the first day of April, they would immediately associate it with April Fool's Day. And it was a day we had a lot of fun with practical jokes and silliness. That doesn't seem to have any significance here in the Philippines, so we don't have to honor April Fool's Day. But what is significant here is that today is a national holiday designated as the conclusion of Ramadan, so it's a Muslim holiday, Eid al-Fitr, Eid al-Fitr. I don't know if I'm probably mispronouncing it, but it's a festive celebration for the Muslims because the month of fasting has come to a conclusion and now it's time to celebrate. I looked this up. I was trying to figure out why it's April 1st. It has to do with this. After the new moon, the Muslims have to see the moon. And after they see the moon, this Eid is the next day. So when I looked it up, it turns out that the new moon was on Saturday. And so the first time you could see the moon would have been Sunday, which means the celebration of Eid was supposed to be yesterday. And for the Muslims, I guess it was really yesterday. How the government decided it was going to be today, I don't know. Maybe it, I don't know. Maybe it's just an extension of the celebration. But I think for the Muslim world, if they saw the moon, they could celebrate yesterday. Now, what I read, I don't know if I got this right, but if they don't see the moon, they have to fast for 30 more days. So I don't know. I imagine that's not put into practice very often. Okay. But I can understand celebrating the end of a month of fasting. I think I would celebrate that too. But we have something much greater to celebrate. When we celebrate the end of Lent, we don't celebrate because we reach the end of Lent. What we celebrate is the resurrection. So it has nothing to do with fasting. It has to do with a conquering of sin and death forever and the ushering in of a whole new creation. So that's what we celebrate, which is far greater than any other reason for celebration. Well, these readings actually anticipate that joyful conquering of sin and death. Let's turn for a moment to this passage from Ezekiel. He sees water trickling from the side of the temple. And then the more he follows this water, the more abundant it gets. Ankle deep, knee deep, waist deep. Finally, it's a river that you can't wade in it anymore. You have to swim in it. This is a symbolic reading. There's no water flowing from the temple in Jerusalem. Jerusalem, remember, is in a high place, so water is a big issue there. It's hard to get water when you're high up on a mountain. Anyway, this reminds me of something that we just passed through in the States in our community. We had a crucifix in our chapel in Corning, which had kind of faded out, and it was looked kind of dull. So we asked an artist to restore the crucifix. And the original crucifix had the piercing of Jesus on his right side. And you couldn't see it. It was so faded, as if he had never been pierced. And so I said, can't you put the wound on the left side so they're piercing the heart of Jesus? Because that's the tradition I'm familiar with. And that's what we have here, Jesus' left side, because that's where the heart is. The pierced heart, and then the blood and water flows from the heart. So the artist was able to do a beautiful job in moving the wound from one side to the other. But in doing some research on this, because I just assumed the wound was always on the left side, no. In some artistic traditions, the wound is on the right side, and some people connect it to this reading. Here's what it says. He led me out to the north gate, around to the outer gate, facing the east, where I saw water trickling from the right side. So water from the right side of the temple symbolizes the right side of the Savior, whose heart was pierced. Now, those things are artistic license. I'm happy to have it on the left side. But it is true that the abundance flowing from the heart of Jesus is extraordinary. Enough grace, you say, enough water, not only to heal, but to provide, more than provide, for the rest of time. That's this great river and all these fruit trees. As I was reflecting on this, I remembered, and you know this too, people don't know about this great river. They really don't know the abundance flowing from the heart of Jesus. What they know is what they learn when they're in third grade or something about their faith, and it's just a trickle. And so as they've grown up, they've left that trickle of water behind because it's so insignificant to them. And they say things like this: well, sure, when I was a child, I loved going to church, I loved learning the songs, and memorizing the commandments or whatever, but I used to believe in the Easter Bunny, and I used to believe in the Santa Claus, and I used to believe in this God, man, death, resurrection thing. But now, I've grown up, and I've left that trickle behind. And you know people who have this, that's how they think. As if the only thing coming from the heart of Jesus is a trickle, an insignificant trickle. Not even enough to get your feet wet. Very sad, because that means they have not followed that flow of water very far. And people, they think that they got it all when they were in third grade or fifth grade, and when they had their catechism class, and that's it. And especially when, as they grew up, they encountered contradictions, because life is full of suffering. As soon as they run into suffering, they say, well, that whole story doesn't help me at all. When I lost my job, or when my wife got cancer or something, that didn't mean anything to me. The sad thing is, that trickle, the more you follow it, becomes more and more abundant until it's way more than you could possibly need. And this is the journey of faith. The journey of faith is, as we follow it, it grows. If we stop following it, it dries up. But if we follow it, it gets richer and deeper and more abundant all the time. There's no limit, in fact. No limit to the grace of God, the mercy of God, the healing power of God, the love of God. We saw this on Sunday, right? The father, the prodigal, thought he could go back and get a trickle from just working as an employee of the father. But when he got there, he found out, oh no, this is not just a trickle. This is an abundance. Let's have a big celebration. That's the same idea. So the sad thing is, many people stop following this river, and so don't get the abundant grace that is available to us all. Well, that takes us to this man, sick for 38 years, in the lying near the pool of Bethesda. It's a water image, right? Water. Here's a pool of water. They call it the sheep gate. That makes me think maybe that water wasn't very clean, because sheep are not very clean. And it seems that they have that water there for some kind of purifying or bathing or something. But the man has in his mind, as was the popular idea, that if there's some kind of stirring in the water, if you get into the water first, you're healed. And he can't do it. And he's been trying so long that he's pretty much given up. Here's a man who stands as the antithesis of what we have been speaking about during the Jubilee year, the pilgrims of hope. Pilgrims of hope. This man is the anti-pilgrim of hope. Or you could say the anti-pilgrim of despair. He's not moving, he can't move, and he doesn't expect anything to happen. So he's exactly the opposite of what we are to be during the Jubilee year. He's given up. Jesus comes to him. Jesus, now the man doesn't know him, So you can't blame him. He doesn't have faith. He doesn't know that he's the very source of the healing that he's longing for. And Jesus, standing in front of him, says, "Do you want to be well?" And the man doesn't say, "Yes, I want to be well." He says, "I don't have anyone. I don't have anyone. I have no one to put me into the pool. Somebody else always gets there ahead of me. Forget it." As if there's no hope. Beautiful. Jesus says, "Rise, take up your mat and walk." As if to say, even when you have no hope, there's hope. Even when you don't expect any miracle, God has the power to give miracles. That's the lesson here, isn't it? So Jesus, even for those who don't know him, is the abundant source of healing. And he blesses people who don't even know him and aren't even expecting. And that's what happens. The man gets well immediately. He picks up his mat and he starts walking around. Now, notice what's happened here. Jesus very deliberately does this miracle on the Sabbath. He knows that the effect of this miracle, it's great for the man and for anyone who sees it, but he knows that for himself, it's going to lead to persecution. It's going to lead to his being pierced. So in his desire for the abundant flood of grace to be released in the world, he puts himself in harm's way for our good. Here's an early stage of the persecution. It says at the end of the gospel, when they find out that Jesus is the one who violated the Sabbath and told this man to violate the Sabbath, it says the Jews began to persecute Jesus because he did this on a Sabbath. So Jesus is revealing himself as the source of healing and grace, but also as the victim for our salvation. The man is healed. Jesus gets the punishment for it. And this is a little foreshadowing of what we're going to get to in the next couple of weeks. The persecution grows and grows and grows. It gets worse and worse for Jesus. It looks, for those without faith, it looks like not only is there no abundant water, even the trickle is drying up. Even the good things that we got from this Jesus, that's all going to come to an end. And it looks like there's no hope, when in fact, the greatest hope is about to be revealed. So as we journey, we're being reminded, we are pilgrims of hope. Pilgrims of hope. Just because all you see is a trickle doesn't mean there's no abundance downstream. Don't be deceived by appearances that make us think that there's nothing but 38 years of suffering. No, there is, yes, there's 38 years of suffering. There's 40 years of suffering. That's Lent, right? But that's not the whole story. Keep following that river. Keep wading into it. Keep going deeper. Duke in altum. Go out into the deep. That's where the abundant grace is. Don't just lie around at some shallow pool. Get up and join this great pilgrimage of hope. And that's how we will discover how much is really available to us. So that's the Lenten journey. And these instructions are so much greater than April Fool's Day, so much greater than Eid al-Fitr or any other celebration of any religion. What we're being offered here is something no one could ever imagine. An abundance of grace that is beyond human capacity. So, thanks be to God. Let us follow the Lord.